Unpopular opinion, but
Unpopular opinion.
You're listening to Unpopular Opinion, a podcast for professionals from all walks of life who want to hear success stories from innovators who've won by taking the path less traveled. In each episode, recovering journalist and content marketer Ashley Amber Saba interviews individuals who have prospered thanks to their genuinely unpopular opinions, despite warnings from naysayers, threats to their careers, and colossal obstacles. All rebels are welcome.
Welcome to Unpopular Opinion. I'm your host, Ashley Amber Saba, and this episode is brought to you by my friends at Audience Ops. Audience Ops is a content marketing agency, and they produce every episode of my show. If you're looking to launch a podcast for your brand or your business, please reach out. Today, I'm joined by my friend, Nick Bennett, evangelist and creator, podcast host, and co-founder of Club PF. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a good talk today.
Love it.
I want to talk to everybody about your unpopular opinion today, which is that you think people have the wrong mindset when it comes to go-to-market, and then it's tackled as a company-first approach when it should be a people-first approach. Can you kind of tell everybody about how you came to that conclusion and what they could be doing to kind of move their efforts that way?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that so often companies have always put themselves first when it comes to a go-to-market strategy. It's like, you know, it's the company. When you're sending emails out, it's marketing at XYZ company. When you're putting an ebook out, it's the marketing, or it's not even the marketing name, it's the company name behind that. But what about all the employees that have done the work to move you there? And so I think that we really need to shift to a people first go to market, which again is really just empowering the people both internally and externally that work for you and everyone that kind of is on the outside looking in. It just makes it so much easier to work with someone. It's like, think about transparent pricing. Think about how many companies actually put pricing on their website. Not very many, but a people first go to market puts transparent pricing on there. It puts the events that you do front and center to make it the attendee first, which goes back to the people. It's the ebook that you do in the, maybe it's the product marketers or the content team. I know you're a content person. It's like, why can't your name be on there in your bio because you contributed to that? Why does it have to be the company? And I think it's just the leadership and the executive team at these companies really need to empower their employees to be people first.
Do you think that the human first approach of doing things is why we're being guided that way? Is it just that people want to connect with actual people and then all of the motions beneath that kind of fall into that bucket then and kind of change the behaviors that we're doing in marketing?
Yeah, I think it, you know, everything has shifted the last couple of years to become very much like people buy from people. You know, everyone says human to human. It's absolutely true. Think about how you buy, or think about, you know, even things that you look at. Like, you turn to communities, you turn to people on LinkedIn, you turn to all these different places. You're not going to follow a brand on LinkedIn unless it's like, you know, a brand of the that you really enjoy, but you're following the people that work for those brands. Now, it's crazy to see how much that can actually move the needle and how much pipeline and revenue close that can come from it. And I've seen it firsthand, but you have to have the backing and the empowerment from the leadership team to actually be able to do this.
How do you go about talking in leadership into doing that then?
I think it's understanding that, like, hey, you know, this is the old playbook, the company first mindset. It's like, it's very transactional. It's very much brand spam. And like, you know, I've talked about like commercials where it's like, you just, you know, it's very much the company just trying to pitch their product, but like, why? What's the why behind it? And when you think about like a people first, it's very much not transactional. It's really relationship driven. It's really about the quality versus the quantity. It's all about the ecosystem that you create within the organization and internally and externally, and the brand that you create and empower your employees to build, whether that's they go on to do their own thing or not. Now, I think that you have to convince leadership that this is the way that people buy in 2023 and beyond, and that, hey, if I can go and show that posting on LinkedIn is going to drive actual impact and bottom line, and I can use self-reported attribution or whatever to show that, they're going to look, they're going to want to see the data at some point and be like, hey, are you actually posting on LinkedIn and driving results? And if you can show that, they're going to be a lot more willing to say, all right, I'm bought into this modern day marketing mindset.
I know that you have been at companies before that you've worked at where people have filled out a form on a webpage and they've literally mentioned your name and your LinkedIn profile. And that was how they got to the company page.
Yep. Yeah. 100%. I mean, it was, it's crazy. My last company, Alice, in the 2 years that I was there, I drove $2 million in pipeline just from organic, LinkedIn creation. And that was through people saying they specifically saw my content. And I'm sure that there was some that fell through the cracks, but still like measurable, what I could see was $2 million. Now, 60% of that turned into closed won revenue. Now think about that. Like if there's a zero cost outside of my time, of course, but there's zero cost, the ROI is really infinite to a certain degree. And it's like, wow, like if I could take one employee and empower 30 employees to do the same thing, think about that. You could cut back on your paid spend, your search, maybe some of these other things, and invest in the areas that are actually like moving the needle. And people like to say, content's dead, email's dead, all these channels are dead, but it's just they're not using it the right way.
Can you catch everybody up on your work history? When people look at the whole picture of Nick from beginning to now.
Yeah. So, I am big into sports. So I went to school for sport management and I got out and I said, I'm going to be a big shot athletic director or a sports agent. And turned out none of that was true. I just really wanted to go to school to play baseball, to be honest with you. But I got out and I was like, all right, I need a big boy job now. What am I going to do? And I went into sales and I never did tech sales, but I did a lot of different weird sales roles. And I worked for like an industrial tool company and I was really good at it. It was just super boring. And you just dealt with like all these like old people that just like would yell at you on the phone. And I did sales for a while. I worked for Motorola and like I would basically go up against the iPhone every single year. And like I would have to convince AT&T to buy Motorola over the iPhone. It was very, very challenging. But it allowed me to figure out like, hey, sales is fun. I just don't like the quotas hanging over my head at, every quarter or every month or whatever it is. I came across a channel marketing role. And channel marketing, for those that maybe don't know, is, you're selling through the channel. It's like maybe you don't have a direct sales team. You're working with partners, whether direct or indirect, to be able to sell your product or services. And so that was pretty fun. I was like, oh, cool. All right. This is my first like foray into marketing. Kind of interesting. What that allowed me to do was move into field marketing. Field marketing is basically the same as channel, except that you have a direct sales team that you're working with to drive pipeline and revenue and all those things. And honestly, I did field marketing for, 10 years, various tech companies. And it was really, field marketing was my first kind of like step into the whole like tech SaaS world. And I just kind of didn't look back. I moved into customer marketing. I did ABM. Now I'm really, big on this whole like creator economy, creators and SMEs and evangelists are actually going to be the ones that move your needle, move the company forward, in 2023 and beyond.
When do you think it was in your career that you started figuring that out? That shift was happening?
I would say, I've always thought about it because B2C has this really figured out and like they're doing really, really strong with it. I'm like, why is B2B like lacking so far behind? And creating content on LinkedIn these last 3.5 years, I've had brands reach out to me and be like, hey, like, do you do sponsored content or like, would you want to work with us in some capacity? I'm like, this is interesting, but it's very much like one-sided of the brand telling the creator or influencer what they want. But like, you don't really have any say. You have like, all right, these are the deliverables that have to be met. And I'm like, there's a better way to do this. And it shouldn't be based on someone's follower count because follower count doesn't mean anything. But what does the engagement look like? Are they seen as like a thought leader within the space that they talk about? And I just figured there was so much upside there. And the more and more companies that I talked to, the more and more CMOs and VPs of marketings that I talked to were like, we want to invest here. We just don't know where to actually get started. We know it's important. I've read a lot of surveys. And one of the surveys I read recently said like 88% of B2B companies in 2023 want to get into influencer marketing, but they just don't know how. So it's a huge number. And I was like, all right, cool. There's so much upside for like what that looks like. Now, the issue is in B2B, like these roles aren't readily available either. So like you have to kind of carve it out for yourself. And I think that's where the evangelism piece kind of like rolls in. It's like evangelism, creator, SME, kind of all mixed together, but it's an impactful role.
All right. Tell me about this Club PF.
So Club PF is something that Mark Killens, who's the CMO at AirMeet, and I, we started because, again, we're big believers in people first. We have said, you know, he's ex-HubSpot, ex-Drift. I've worked for a various amount of companies as well. And I said, there's so many frameworks and processes and things that we do that is very much people first. We're a big believer of it. How do we actually put this out there and like get people bought into this vision? And so we've created kind of a bunch of assets around like what people first actually is, how it works. And we didn't want to call it a community. We're trying not to call it a community. We're calling it a club on purpose because community is so overplayed and everyone's doing a community. But a club makes it feel like it's much more inclusive to a certain degree. Like everyone wants to go to the club. Like that's the cool place to hang out. And so we soft launched it about 2 months ago. And we had about 50 members and we went full time, or I don't want to say full time with it. Like it's, we're working on it, but we went public with it. And we have about 100 members now. And so this is a paid community. We said, you know, we want people to feel like they want to be there. And Slack communities, all these free communities, people join, but like they don't actually add any value because they're not, you know, they're not paying anything to be there. So we said, we're going to charge $15 a month, or we have a VIP tier that gives you direct access to Mark and I. And we wanted to see like what happens. And so many people are engaged. Like the percentage of people that are engaged week over week is like 90% of members that are engaged. Like we put go-to-market tips on a daily basis. We have weekly master classes. Leslie from Sendoso is joining me soon to be able to do one of those. We had Will from Lavender, all these things. And then we host like a bigger monthly event. And we try to focus everything around like a people-first mindset. But what falls under that is like community-led growth, customer-led growth, PLG, all these different things play up into people-first. It's just like a mentality of how you look at it.
Do you think it's tough to get people to shift into that from other mindsets? Like what's the biggest objection or just complaint or misunderstanding that you're hearing for people in being able to overcome it?
I think the biggest thing is they don't know how to convince their leadership team that this is like the right way. Like they're a believer of it, but it's like, how do I change everything that I've been doing for years to be more people first? And I don't think it's changing everything right away, but I think it's changing pieces over time. And there's a lot of low hanging fruit, like, you know, going back to like the pricing page, why don't companies put pricing on their website? It's so bizarre to me. It's like, you're going to give me the pricing at some point anyways. In what I do now, when I look for tech, like when I was buying tech, like if they didn't have pricing on the website, I didn't even bother like reaching out to them because I was like, listen, I'm going to have to sit through like 5 meetings before I actually see pricing. And there's little things like that you can do that becomes a lot more transparent. It shows that you actually care about the people that are landing on your website. And if you add up all these things over time, there's, you know, about 20, 25 different things that you could actually do that actually put you in a better spot from like a people first mindset over company first. And I guarantee you it's going to probably drive more business results for you as well.
Oh, I believe that. What's your ultimate hope for Club PF?
Oh, that's a good question. I was talking to Mark about this the last couple of weeks as well. And I think, you know, we want to make it where it's a space where people feel like it's a safe space where they can learn both personally and professionally. And there's so much content and tactical content that they could actually go and implement themselves. You know, I think content-led growth is another thing. Like we talk about, oh, how does content and events go together? But it's showcasing all of these people, going back to like that people first. Mark and I don't know everything, but people like you, people like Karina, people like all these others, they know stuff. And so being able to share that with the members is a huge thing. And like, again, the masterclasses, people love those. And like, if we can just continue to do those on a weekly basis and continue to grow the member audience, ultimately we want to have, you know, thousands of people in this. Now that's going to take a long time, but it's also going to be one piece of like the entire like mindset going forward. Like there's a media component, there's other service components that kind of fall under this, but this is like the first kind of piece of everything coming together.
You not too long ago had a post on LinkedIn that I liked about buyer personas, which you deemed meh, and mentioned that marketers spend a lot of time on them, maybe too much time on them, when they could be focusing more on just guiding more to a people first approach. Can you kind of talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, it's, I see the value in buyer personas, but I think it's understanding who your ICP is. And for me, like I've always mostly worked in MarTech. I understand, you know, take Airmeet, for example, take Alice, like we sold to marketers that were like me. It was easier. Like I could, you know, failed marketer, event marketer, demand gen marketer, but like, I don't need to know that you have a cat or a dog or anything like that. Like it's not going to, unless, you know, unless it's something where I'm going to send you a gift and I realize you like cookies, like, cool, I'm going to send you cookies. That doesn't mean you're going to buy from me because I send you cookies. But if I can understand your pain points of like what you actually care about from like a high level and then get to know you as an actual individual, then cool, we can start to talk about those things. I think cats and, you know, dogs and all these things is one piece of it, but understanding you like holistically is like the bigger piece of it. And I think so often, you know, even companies hire these consultants to build out these like buyer personas and they spend so much money on them. And you could do so much more just understanding your ICP, even your secondary ICP, and focusing on that, building out the list. There's a lot of like low lift from a tactical perspective that you could focus on versus like just building out these, you know, imagination type characters.
I think a lot of that to me is they could be almost fan fiction. Like it's like Beth lives in New York City and she's a marketing manager and she probably has a pet ferret and she eats spaghetti like four nights a week. I like, how are we even like, what are we even doing there? Sometimes we're going like too deep.
And think about how much someone probably spent to like get that created for themselves, which is crazy.
It's outlandish. Like a lot of the times to me, I've been at companies where they were already in place when I came in and I've like gone through them and be like, how do you know what they eat? Like, what does that have to do with B2B in any way? Like, I don't know.
Exactly. Like, just like, honestly, just go out and talk to your customers, talk to your prospects, be where your buyers are, and you're going to get way more insights than making up these imaginary personas.
I definitely agree. I just want to take a quick moment to thank the Audience Ops team for producing my show. They make it easy for me to focus on talking with cool people like Nick, and that way I can focus on conversations and they can do all of the producing and the editing and making sure that my assets look good. And then I can just, you know, go out there and get cool guests like Nick. Thank you again, Audience Ops team. Okay, Nick, you talk a lot about the creator economy, which we've touched on, and how businesses should not sleep on it. How can businesses attract creators to their organizations?
I think it's understanding how they can be used. And I think it kind of falls under three buckets. So I think influencer marketing 2.0, it's like, all right, cool. How can I work with creators to integrate into my go-to-market strategy? Again, it's like that people first. I want to work with the creator, which is the person, because they have the authenticity and the trust. They maybe have a stronghold into a market that I want to get into, or a service or a industry or whatever it is. And so you're building kind of like a dream team of all these creators. And it's not just like, hey, go out and create sponsored content for me. It's more of like, hey, what can we do from a content perspective where we work together, where it's just one piece of the larger pie, but people are going to tune in because they love you as an individual. So I think that's one piece of it. I think the second piece is really hiring them onto your own team. You know, I know Lavender didn't do this on purpose, but, you know, think of like the Lavender team, for example, like all incredible people that create content, like Will, Todd, Jen, like all these people, amazing content. You see them everywhere. Lavender's blowing up left and right. I love the Lavender team. I was actually the first one to shout them out years ago before they even had a product in B2B. But like, you could hire these creators onto your team. And again, you build a dream team of creators. Now it's like, all right, we can't just pay all these people to like be a full-time role. They may have to take on additional responsibilities outside of that, which is okay. Like for me, like I did events, like event-led growth, you know, evangelism. But when you're speaking at events, when you're creating content, you're probably actually paying way less overall than you would be to go do it on paid spend or search or whatever. And then I think the third bucket is really like, how do you collaborate? And this is what we were trying to do at AirMeet. Like, how do we create this creator studio? And it's more of a collaboration. Like you think of like an art gallery. So many creators go to the art gallery and they paint the art, but they go to the art gallery because they want to collaborate with other artists that are there. That's the same for creators. I want to collaborate with other creators. How can you create a space for them that the brand ultimately benefits through branding and additional things, but like you just create a safe space where like these creators get to do cool stuff together. And I think those are like the three ways that you could kind of like bring creators in, depending on like what your appetite is for it.
You have a podcast called The Anonymous Marketer that I have tuned in to from the beginning and I love. The show is amazing. How did you come up with that idea for the show?
Well, first, thank you. I know you, I always love like, you know, when you send messages and you tell me like how much you actually like enjoy the episodes, because it means a lot. It's something where, you know, so, you know, in 2020, when the pandemic happened, everyone turned to communities. Communities popped up all the time. And it was fine early on because you could ask questions in these communities without feeling judged. Now that community is so saturated and everyone is in there, there's a good chance that your colleagues are also in there. And so you don't feel as safe asking the questions that you used to. Where do you turn to? It's like the one place that you had, you no longer have. So I was like, you know, this could be really interesting to just have people anonymously ask questions because they don't want to be judged, but they do want the answers to it. And it's not about the right or the wrong answer. It's about really starting a discussion for the community. And I've done things around, you know, layoffs, again, very important around here. It's not just about marketing specific, but it's really about like, sometimes we get tactical, sometimes we get high level, but it's really about just like, hey, what does that conversation look like? And bringing people in that kind of have that conversation with me. And it's not their viewpoint on like what they would do for their company or whatever, but it's like, hey, here's some advice that I would give you. And hopefully it not only gives advice to that one person who wrote that question, but ultimately everyone else that's listening. And it's gone over extremely well. You know, side note, but like we... you know, randomly on Twitter the other day, I wrote, you know, what happened that I got laid off. And unfortunately, I put, you know, if you're looking to sponsor my podcast, let me know. And I got a DM from someone at Google, VP of marketing at Google. And she was like, hey, I just, you know, sponsored the podcast for 3 months. And so it's like now Google sponsors the podcast, which I can't wait to like put that everywhere, by the way, a few more weeks, but maybe by the time this episode's come out, you'll see Google sponsoring it. But
wow,
it's crazy to see that people believe in the vision, people believe in the concept, people believe in like what we're actually trying to do. And it's been fun. I've released I think like 10 or 11 episodes so far. Have a bunch of them recorded as well. So we'll see. It's been fun. It's been a lot of fun over my last podcast, that's for sure.
The way that I like, the thing that I like about how you're doing it is you're taking somebody on to help you each week. How are you picking out the people that can answer the question with you? I love that you're doing that, by the way.
Yeah. You know, I was going to do some of the episodes solo, depending on like what the question, I have actually recorded some that are like just me, like 20, 25 minute rant around like, you know, if it's something that I feel like I can deeply talk about, if it's something where, you know, I'll give you a good example, like paid media. I don't know what, I know it's a little bit, but like, I don't know a ton. So I was trying to find someone that knows paid media for LinkedIn specifically inside and out. And so Tim Davidson immediately came to mind. And so him and I recorded that and it was like super cool. And I just try to find people that can relate or have experienced the question because I know them personally or they talk about it on LinkedIn and I see it. And sometimes I'm just like, you know, hey, like this could be like a cool idea for you to talk about or something like that. But it's been really good. And I have a lot of people that will like pitch me on like wanting to come on the show as a guest, but I'm like, listen, it's not the type of show where you come on and like talk about yourself. Like you're really just giving advice. And then when I tell them that, they're like, oh yeah, I'm not interested. And I'm like, all right, that's weird, but oh well.
Have you ever had questions that have come in that have like stumped you or that you just were shocked by, anything like that?
Yeah, there's been some that have like really like thrown their companies, like not by name, but like they've like thrown their bosses under the bridge, like thrown their company under the bridge, like talked about how toxic it is. We've gotten about like 70 questions and I actually need to do another push of it probably soon, but like nothing's off limits. Like people ask very tactical questions. How do I go from like basically a like not focusing on pipeline to actually focusing on pipeline? Like what does like Amanda and Tividad, like how do I actually create a content strategy at an early stage startup, which I'm like, I know you could relate to that as well. And it's just, sometimes it's very, very tactical like that. And then sometimes, you know, Kaylee from Refine Labs was on and like, we talked about like layoffs and like, hey, what do you do if you have to take the job of like four other people that did it? You're one person, you're not getting paid to do it, but like, hey, you're expected to do it. What does that look like? And she's gone through layoffs. I've gone through layoffs. So like we could relate a little bit further.
Where can people go if they want to submit a question?
Yeah. So head over to motionagency.io/anonymous and you'll see a form at the very bottom. And it just asks you like, hey, what's your company size? What, you know, industry you're in? Put the question. It just helps me like level set for when we're saying like, hey, this is a MarTech company. You're on a marketing team of four people. Because then people that are listening can be like, oh, cool. Hey, I'm in a similar position as this versus someone that says like, I'm on a, you know, 1,000-person company with a 30-person marketing team. You could probably take some from that, but you may not relate as much as like a smaller company.
Oh yeah. I like that you paint the picture. Like I've been in the different department sizes and things, and it's a very different when you're in a 2-3 person marketing team than a 25-30 completely different.
100%.
Okay. Event-led growth. Give me a hot take.
Ooh, event-led growth. I think that, you know, companies are saying that webinars and events are dead. It's just, you're doing it wrong. You're focusing on the wrong things. Event-led growth really does three things. It's about the experience. It's about engagement. It's about data. How do you use those three things to ultimately put the person first, using those three things to create an experience that really just wows people? And we join events, and especially in this virtual world, we join events mostly because of the speaker or the content. But what does the experience look like when you actually get in there? Is it very much people first? Is it really just a company trying to pitch me on their product, you know, for 30 minutes? What does that look like? Then what is the data that you're actually taking from this? If I can say, Ashley joined this event, she asked these five specific questions, she answered the poll this way, you're taking those insights and maybe, you know, I'm not going to pitch you on the product, but maybe I'm creating content because I'm seeing similarities of like other people asking the same questions. Now we can create content, blog posts, social content around that that'll hopefully answer that for you plus others.
Paint me a picture of an event that you'd like to go to, like what it would look like for you.
I mean, I can tell you one that I'm creating that I'm excited to go to because I've always wanted to go to this type of event. I'm running this event Hiatus in November in Costa Rica. And it's all about for creators that want to kind of reinvent, recharge, and kind of like have a safe place to do these workshops. There's going to be, you know, a bunch of workshops around like YouTube, for example. How do I actually do YouTube shorts better? I mean, again, we're video right now. Like I don't know how to do YouTube shorts. Like no one watches my videos really, but I know how to do LinkedIn well. But like Todd Clauser is an expert and Morgan Ingram is an expert at YouTube shorts. So like it's, again, those types of workshops where it's intimate, it's micro events. It's very much, I mean, Costa Rica, I mean, who would turn that down? It's right on the beach, but like, it doesn't have to be in Costa Rica, but it's more of like the smaller intimate types of events where I can actually like take tactical stuff away versus like the high level stuff and go implement it in my life, whether it's personal or professional.
Okay. Final question. I ask everybody at the end of the show to debunk an unpopular opinion. And what that means is somebody's calling this an unpopular opinion a lot, and it is not. For example, marketing should talk to customers. Duh.
Oh, I would say that when you say there's no silos within your company, there's 100% silos in every company out there. And if you tell me there isn't, I'm going to tell you you're lying to you. You may say you don't have any silos, but what's to say product and marketing doesn't have silos, or sales and CS, or like there's silos somewhere in the company, whether they're big or small. And like you saying that you're going to fix the silos yourself is not something that's going to happen. It's all about the communication and the effort of wanting to be there, but it starts from the top down. And so many people say they don't have silos, and I call BS on it.
Oh yeah. Totally agree with that one. Okay. Where can people go if they want to find more Nick Bennett?
Ooh, so definitely LinkedIn, find me there. Make sure to subscribe to The Anonymous Marketer. If you want to check out Club PF, if you care about a people first, you know, go to Market Strategy, head over to it's clubpf.co, check it out. Would love to have you, and just, you know, send me a DM if you want to chat, whatever. You know, I reply to everything. That's one thing. I try to like give back and try to like make time where I can, especially because I won't have a job. You know, I have more time. So.
Well, luckily, because you have evangelized your name the way that you have, I think that you're going to be fine. And I can confirm that he does get back to messages. I've been talking to Nick LinkedIn message for probably 3 years. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. Yeah, it's you've always been a such a great supporter, and I want to thank you for that. That means a lot.
Likewise, you've introduced me to people, and you've talked me down, and all kinds of things over the years. So I appreciate it, and I definitely, again, I enjoyed your last podcast. I'm enjoying the one that you're doing now, and I will continue to be a huge Nick fan. But thank you for coming on my show today, and I hope that you have a great end of your week.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks for listening to Unpopular Opinion. This episode was produced by Audience Ops, a content-led growth agency. If you're looking for help launching a podcast, Audience Ops handles all the legwork so you can focus on providing the subject matter expertise. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow Ashley's show on Spotify, Apple, or YouTube.